Susan Laurie Parks' Top Dog Underdog won the 2002 Pulitzer Prize for Drama and was the number one choice in last year's New York Times list of the 25 best American plays since Angels in America. The play is now being performed at Shakespeare and Company in Lenox through September 8th. In the play, two brothers, Lincoln and Booth, are locked in a battle of wits and struggle to come to terms with their identity and what history has handed them, even their names. To tell us more, we welcome director Reggie Life. Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Joe?
Wonderful to have you back on the program.
Thank you.
We also welcome actor, is it Dion?
Dion Griffin Presley, yes.
Yes, okay. There was an A in Dion, and I just wanted to make sure that I had that right.
It's very special.
Dion Griffin Presley, good morning. How are you, sir?
Fantastic.
Very nice to have you here. And Bryce Michael Wood joins us as well. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. Good to have you here. All three of you, welcome. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Let us begin with you, Reggie, of what brought you to want to direct and helm this particular production.
Well, it was sort of gifted to me by Alan Burroughs. I had did three shows prior to this at Shakespeare and Company, Kaufman's yep. Barbershop, God of Carnage, and last season, Morning After Grace. And when Alan and I began to talk about this upcoming season, he said he had something up, you know, up his sleeve that he wanted to talk to me about later on. I had no idea it was going to be Top Dog Underdog, but once he mentioned it to me, I was really happy about it.
What made you happy? What was it about that confluence that you were excited about?
Well, I saw the original production at the Public Theater many years ago, and I was very moved by the play and by the text and by what the play was about, and sort of the odd way that she had incorporated the Lincoln and Booth images in the play.
Yeah.
So it was one of those works in the theater, those works from the American canon that you just hope to get your fingers on one day in a production, and just that chance.
So once you get your fingers on it, what is it that allow you to do to understand, to explore, to figure it out?
Well, I'm a great believer in the text, and it's a well-written, well-constructed play. I mean, so I just let the text sort of speak to me, and I feel that's my job as director. When you've got a good play, what you should do is just follow the words, follow the text, follow the story, and let that create the journey in rehearsal and in performance. And so, you know, that's my process and my procedure. You know, I believe in the text, and so I let the text dictate the work from there.
Before I bring these two gentlemen into the conversation, what is it like in the conversations prior that you have with these two men of taking on these parts?
Well, I have conversations again with my design team, which I have an incredible design team for this show.
Yeah.
And we talk about the play, the themes of the play, the overall structure of the play, and my take on it, my feeling about the play and the approach that I want to take with it. And that's usually months prior to rehearsals beginning, so that the physical kind of atmosphere of the play is already sort of constructed and being worked on. And then, of course, I get to meet the actors, and we begin that process of rehearsal and mounting the production.
In that process of rehearsal, is there exploration? Is there discussion?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the whole way. I mean, we start with a table read, and usually the first, for me, 2 or 3 days, we don't get on our feet yet. We just sit around the table and read the play and reread the play. And after each reading, we talk about it, and we find new things. We talk about the new things that we found. We reinterpret things we may have brought to the rehearsal that we now realize, hey, that doesn't exist, but this is really what's happening in the play. So, no, there's a lot of time spent, as I would call it, at the table before we get on our feet, so that when you get on your feet, what you're bringing in that process is all that exploration and all that discussion that you had during the table read and subsequent, you know, kind of discussions of the play over meals and, you know, afterwards. Yeah, right. The whole process.
Dion Griffin Presley, give us a sense of what that process is like for you.
Rehearsal process, oh, it's quite amazing. What I love most about the rehearsal process is the entire process, but really the table work. Reggie really, really emphasized that he wanted to honor Susan Laurie Parks' rest, her beats, and the breath of the play, and just really put the words into our bodies and hear what we're saying. And that has helped a great deal because, you know, there's so much going on in this play. There's a tremendous amount of emotional unpacking, a tremendous amount of joy, a tremendous amount of laughter.
Yeah.
And it's great to just hear and just be in the room where the audience is pretty much like, you know, a fly on the wall or sneaking, peeking in to take a peek at what we're doing as brothers in the space. And that's been really exciting.
You play Booth. Tell us about that character.
Oh, Booth. Booth is a charmer. Booth is a hustler. Booth is a great man. He's come from a troubled past. His mother and father left him when he was 11, and his older brother was 16. And he's come from a middle-class lifestyle, you know, so he's accustomed to having really nice things. And, you know, he remembers being able to have an American dream, remembers being able to have some sort of, you know, ability to live in a country where he does not quite have the means right now, presently. And he's a booster. He boosts things. He shoplifts, does what he has to do to survive. He lives in a one-room apartment. And he's able to pay his rent because his brother stays there. With his older brother lives with him now. And he's able to pretty much survive by being codependent and allowing his brother to stay there with him. And he's got some extreme emotions, mm-hmm. I would say. But he's I'm still figuring out exactly who he is exactly. Mm. And I think each night I find out a lot more. But I do believe that he's a beautiful soul. He's troubled, but he's a beautiful soul, and he's got good intentions.
which is a lovely thing to play, I would think.
Yeah.
Bryce Michael Wood plays Lincoln. Same question of what it's like to play that particular character.
You know, I think Lincoln, the biggest part about him in this play, the biggest part about me in this play is the idea of identity. And how that's brought up throughout the entire play, whether that's him being named Lincoln and what that means for someone named Lincoln growing up, you know, and just like the comparison to that and the feeling of having to become someone great or be someone like a Lincoln, just being named that. But also his identity as, you know, this play is about, you know, a three-card Monty hustler and just like the card hustle game and a game that he was super a part of in another life and what his identity is outside of that now being a Lincoln impersonator at an arcade also yeah. being named Lincoln and like what are the effects of that but he's a you know he's a very specific man. He's a very detail oriented person and he's gonna give his best at whatever he's attempting to do.
And it just seems implicit in what you're doing is that it's going to be about relationships, but it's certainly going to be about a sibling relationship.
Yes, very much so. The sibling dynamic, the family dynamic of the older brother, younger brother, the top dog and the underdog, as it were, in the title, and just the dynamic of family wounds and how that plays a role in their individual lives as the mother and the father's relationship to each of the brothers and how we move forward in that.
It's just like you're born and then life, like a cat, just sort of bats you all over the place. And it just bats the hell out of you. And then at some point you're left and you have to figure out what you were just through and how you move on.
That's, I mean, that's a great way
yeah.
to describe kind of their upbringing and how they had to survive, knowing what life was in that middle class sense and knowing what was being pushed to them and how they were educated at home about what life could be and what our parents wanted for us. But then life did happen and we were kind of batted around, and how we landed on our feet was in a very specific way. And when that specific way is taken from someone or stripped from someone without a high school diploma, without a college degree, what are the options? You know, where do you go from here? Still in hopes and still in search of that, you know, American dream. How do you move forward? Where do people without, you know, the high school diploma and the degree go to? And what lengths will they go to in order to obtain that American dream?
Mm. In the 17 years since this play was first mounted and written, I mean, it's still very relevant, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And very probably always will be.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I think so. I mean, because I mean, Top Dog Underdog is an American story. I mean, it's looking at, again, those images and those ideas and, again, that way of life, you know, that we call, quote, unquote, the American dream, that we're all still pursuing, that we'll always pursue in this nation, and how that can be diabolically sabotaged, you know, along the way, that there are going to be top dogs and they're going to be underdogs forever. And so I think this play will be performed, you know, years and years and years to come. And who knows, say 25 years ago when you do a production of this, what the response will be. But I would bet you there will still be the same struggle going on as people strive for that American dream.
Dion, you had been a part of the Shakespeare and Company family for a little bit.
Yes, I have. Very fortunate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what was that like to go and be in workshops and then kind of work your way into this production?
Oh, man. It's liberating. It's eye-opening. I'm learning a great deal about myself and how I breathe, you know. It's amazing. I mean, the teachers there, the training is absolutely fantastic. I recommend anybody, you know, taking the month-long intensive with Tina Packer and the amazing educational staff that they have there. It has been a journey. I mean, I first auditioned for the company in 2016, Merchant of Venice. I got on the Peter Pan bus and went to Lenox, never left New York to go to Massachusetts before. I never, you know, did any of that. And I had an amazing audition with John Croy and Ariel Bach. And I did three monologues. I mean, they were like back to back. First, they were like, oh, you have a monologue? I was like, yeah, I got one. And I did Mercutio, old Queen Mab speech. And then after that, they wanted another one, and I did Hamlet, Oh, What a Rogue and Peasant Slave. And then after that, they wanted a modern one. And I said, okay. And I did Sergeant Waters from A Soldier's Play. And it's amazing to me because this is my fourth season with the company, and I've done quite a lot of Shakespeare. And Alan Burroughs called me up, like, what was it, January 3rd this year, and offered this role. And this is the first modern play I've done with the company and the first modern play I've done in about 5 years. So it's like that Sergeant Waters piece that I did at the audition was extremely relevant because, you know, I had to apply also the Shakespeare and all that stuff. So
and just to give people an idea of what it's like to be you guys, you were both just in Twelfth Night together.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're doing that while you're getting ready for this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That balance in and of itself is the most
strange
thing.
That's the blood from a stone.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the strangest thing. Just even like the language in your mouth of going from I played Orsino in Twelfth Night and Dion was able to play Sebastian in Twelfth Night. Going from, you know, just Shakespearean text and pattern and rhythm, and then going into Top Dog Underdog, you would think that it would be a stark difference, but in fact it was not, because Susan Laurie Parks writes in a very rhythmic, very metered, very specific, intended way, and she's musical in intention, and she's Greek in terms of tragedy, and she's Shakespeare in terms of language. So, like, at you know, at first glance, you would think, oh, this is going to be a huge, like, difference, and this is going to be something super hard to balance. But the only thing that was hard to balance was the worlds of the play. But in terms of text and language, I think, you know, being in Twelfth Night just before this probably helped us even more in terms of being very keyed into her text and her language and the rhythms of how we speak in this play.
Yeah, get you into a rhythm.
Really, really, really get you into the rhythm quick. Yeah. But the difference was sleep and time spent. And Reggie, like if we rehearsed in the beginning of the day and having a night show, Reggie would be like, all right, guys, rest up for tomorrow. And we'd be like, we're about to go do a show. And he'd be like, dang, for real? He would always forget that we had to go do a show.
He'd be thinking, what I've learned from this conversation is Reggie may have a better agent.
Yeah, I gotta figure that one out. We gotta. My people gotta talk to Reggie's people.
Susan Laurie Parks of Top Dog Underdog is now being performed at Shakespeare and Company in Lenox, Massachusetts through September 8th. Shakespeare.org. Gentlemen, a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.